Welcome to the Murder House Radio Show. I'm your host, X. On this show, we will be covering serial killers, killers, mass shooters, disappearances, true crime, and the most deplorable things and people in history, and all that good, dark stuff. The Murder House Radio Show will be a radio show slash podcast. I'll be uploading videos every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. Once you hit the subscribe button, hit the bell notification and select all notifications if you are viewing on YouTube. And hit follow if you are listening on any podcasting platform. So sit down, get comfortable, grab some coffee or whatever your preferred beverage is, turn off the lights, and enjoy the show. Hey guys, how's your Friday going? I hope it's going well, and I hope your second week of this month is also going well. Let's get into this. Today's episode is on David Parker Ray, aka the Toy Box Killer, also known as the Toolbox Killer. David was born November 6th. 1936. Yo, what's up with all these killers being born in November or dying in November? Like, what's up with that? But he also died May 28th, 2002, so almost 20 years ago. He was an American serial killer, kidnapper, torturer, and he was suspected. Yes, he was a suspected serial killer, but he did kidnap and torture his victims, and he would rape them. And he was suspected to have killed them, but they're not sure. No bodies were ever found, but he was accused by his accomplices of killing several women and suspected by police to have murdered as many as 60 women from Arizona and New Mexico. Holy. While living in Elephant Butte, B-U-T-T-E, New Mexico, approximately 7 miles north of Truth or Consequences. What the hell? Truth or Consequences? What is this? Truth or Consequences is a city in New Mexico and county seat of Sierra County. In 2010, the population was 6,475. It has frequently been noted on lists of unusual places names for having chosen to rename itself to, yeah, that's definitely an unusual name for sure. But, yes, he had a torture chamber, I guess you could call it. He soundproofed a truck trailer and he called it the Toy Box, and equipped it with items used for sexual torture. Ray was convicted of kidnapping and torture in 2001, for which he received a lengthy sentence, but he was never convicted of murder. Oof. He died of a heart attack about a year after his conviction in two cases. Okay. So there's your little recap on the guy. His biography. Let's dabble in this. So during his childhood, Ray and his younger sister Peggy lived with their disciplinarian grandfather. He was sporadically visited by his violent alcoholic father, who would supply him with magazines depicting sadomasochistic, sadomasochistic pornography, so like whipping and BDSM and torture, but like hardcore fucked up porn, basically. At Mountaineer High School in Mountaineer, New Mexico, he was also bullied by his peers for the shyness around girls. Well, I guess that's, yeah, some guys are just shy around women. But his sexual fantasies of raping, torturing, and even murdering women developed during his teenage years. Wow. I don't get how you get those kind of fantasies as a teenager. Like, how? I could understand maybe as you get older or something, I guess, but as a teenager, like, bro. But, around this time, his sister discovered his sadomasochism drawings, as well as pornographic photographs of bondage acts. After completing his high school, he received an honorable discharge from the U.S. Army, okay, where his service also included work as a general mechanic. Ray was divorced 4 times and had 2 children, including his accomplice daughter, Jess Ray. Oof. Imagine that, your dad's into some fucking weird-ass dark shit, and the daughter's helping. That's fucking, that's whack, that's creepy as hell. But imagine finding your sibling is fucking disturbing porn collection. That would be fucking something right there. So his crimes were sexual assaults and rapes, and he allegedly killed his victims using whips, chains, pulleys, straps, clamps, leg spread bars, surgical blades, and saws. Yeah, there's a documentary I watched on this dude, and I saw his little chamber, and snippets of his videos or whatever. They're pretty fucked up. Like, he recorded all of them. And he even kidnapped his daughter's friend with the help of his daughter and held her for a while. She escaped, or he let her go or something after drugging her. Like, he would drug them heavily, I'm pretty sure, if I'm thinking of the right dude, and he would just let them go. And he'd usually keep them drugged or semi-drugged and awake, so they would, like, not really remember, and they'd just think it was, like, a bad trip or, like, a nightmare or something. But, yes, I think I'm thinking of the right dude, but I could be wrong, so don't quote me on that. But it is thought that he had terrorized many women with these tools for many years while living in New Mexico with the help of accomplices, some of whom are alleged to have been several of the women he was dating. Oof. Yeah. I think he might have killed them to get away with it for that long or whatever. But since he may have drugged them, you know, the cops are like, yeah, she's fucking drugged or whatever. We can't trust her. She probably did this to herself or, like, got fucked up or some shit. I don't know. But that's what the cops may have thought. But, inside the torture room, along with numerous sex toys, torture implements, syringes, and detailed diagrams showing ways of inflicting pain, there was a homemade electrical generator which was used for torture. Oof. A mirror was mounted on the ceiling above the obstetric table to which he strapped his victims, so like a fucking bed or a table with straps or whatever. Ray also put his victims in wooden contraptions, then bent them over to immobilize them, while he had his dog and sometimes other friends rape them. Oof. Yeah, there's a bunch of sick-ass people out there. Imagine having, like, a friend, and he's like, hey, you want to come have a little fun with something I got over here or something? And then they walk in and see someone tied down or whatever. That's fucked up. He has been said to have wanted his victims to see everything he was doing to them. Ray often had an audio tape recording of his voice played for his victims whenever they regained consciousness. Yeah, I think he would kidnap them and then play a tape when they woke up explaining the whole thing. And it's like 45 minutes to an hour long. It was disturbing. It's not the original tape. It was a dude reading it for the court or whatever, probably censoring some, like, curse words or whatever, but it was nonetheless disturbing. I'll maybe find a clip and put it in, but I don't want this to get copyrighted or whatever. But I will definitely put it in the description below if you want to listen to it. But there's not a lot on this dude, on this website or whatever. But don't you worry, your pretty little heads off. I'll listen to a documentary or something and see if I can't pick up anything else that this site left out. But his arrest and investigation. Ray posed as an undercover police officer and approached Cynthia Vigil in a parking lot. He told her she was under arrest for solicitation of prostitution and handcuffed her. He put her in his trailer and took her to Elephant Butte. After 3 days of captivity, Vigil escaped from his trailer at Elephant Butte on March 22nd, 1999. Yes. To escape, she waited until Ray had gone to work and then unlocked her chains. Ray's accomplice, Cindy Hendy, had left the keys on a nearby table before going to another room where she participated in a telephone call. Okay. After she got the keys, Hendy noticed Vigil's attempt to escape and a fight broke out. During the struggle, Hendy broke a lamp on the survivor's head, but Vigil unlocked her chains and stabbed Hendy in the neck with an ice pick. Well, shit! Hendy fell to the floor and Vigil escaped. She fled while wearing only an iron-sleeved collar and padlock chains. Oof. Iron-sleeved collar. Oh, shit, one of those. She ran down the road seeking help, which she got from a nearby homeowner who took her in, comforted her, and called the police. She escaped. Her escape led police officers to the trailer and incited the capture of Ray and his accomplices. Police stopped Ray and Hendy, and Ray was taken to jail after the publicity surrounding the arrest. Another victim, Angelica Montano, came forward. She told a similar story and said that she had reported the incident to the police, but there had been no follow-up. Yeah, that's, wild. It's sad, because with all this stuff, if there's drugs in their system, or they look like they're strung out or whatever, the cops will listen, maybe do a little follow-up but for the most part, they'll just, like, disregard it as fucking drug addict antics or whatever. It's sad. But Ray had a video of another victim, Kelly Garrett, also called Kelly Van Cleaver, which dated from 1996. Yes, I think that's the video I was talking about. When they argued it in court, it was literally he said, she said about it being consensual or whatever, since he had the audacity to record it. That's the defense anyway. But Garrett ultimately was found in Colorado alive after police identified a tattoo on her ankle. She later testified that she had gotten in a fight with her husband and decided to spend the night playing pool with friends on July 24th, 1996. Ray's daughter, Jess, who knew Garrett, took her to Blue Water Saloon in Truth or Consequence, New Mexico, and drugged the beer she was drinking. Garrett had walked to the parking lot when she suffered a blow from behind, which knocked her unconscious. Oof. That'd be fucking scary, man. Straight scary. You're just enjoying your night, having a beer. You get drugged and knocked out and kidnapped. That's some straight Hostel shit right there. Let me know if you've seen the movie Hostel, by the way. That's a good movie. That's how you build trust issues while traveling. Not really trust issues, but you know. But Ray took her to his trailer, attached a dog collar and a leash to her neck. Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T, Awoke, but blacked out several times during the 2 days of torture and drugging. During this time, Ray noticed that she was breathing and slashed her throat open. Thinking he had killed her, Ray dumped her beside a road near Caballo. She was later treated for her injuries at a local clinic. Neither her husband nor police believed her story. How? She had a slit throat, bro. Her husband believed she had been cheating on him the night she was attacked. He sued for divorce, and Garretta moved to Colorado. She was later interviewed on Cold Case Files about her ordeal. Imagine that. You get kidnapped, assaulted, raped, and attempted murder, almost murdered. Your husband doesn't believe in, you were out cheating, bitch. And the cops were like, gosh, you're probably just a drug addict, man. That'd be fucking horrible, man. Two other accomplices were uncovered by the investigation. Glenda Jean, Jess Ray, so his daughter, and Denise Yancey. Yancey admitted to strangling his former girlfriend, Maria Parker, after Ray had kidnapped and tortured her. Yancey was convicted on second-degree murder and of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and was sentenced to 2 15-year prison terms. Damn, I don't think that's long enough right there. After that murder, Ray allegedly admitted to having had an accomplice named Billy Bowers, a previous business partner whom Ray also murdered. Okay. The FBI sent 100 agents to examine Ray's property and surroundings, but no identifiable human remains were ever found. Keyword identifiable. So they could have found some stuff, but they weren't sure, so it wouldn't count as evidence, really. To prevent women from reporting the crimes, Ray had drugged them with agents, including amnesia, yeah, like I said, so their memories were faulty and they could have thought it was like a dream. He made a tape recording of himself telling one woman that the drugs were sodium pentothal and phenobarbital. Okay. Whatever those are. One woman remained uncertain that her recollections of the abuse were anything but nightmares, yet, see what I mean? Until she was contacted by the FBI. After questioning, she came to remember her mistreatment in increasing detail. Yeah, man. Like, it takes a while for you to digest trauma, I guess you could say. Because if you've ever had, like, a real traumatic event, everyone's different. But, like, you could remember it. You'll be fine for, like, the first days. Then the nightmares and shit will set in. And then you'll just start remembering details slowly and stuff. And it could be years, man. Because, yeah, scary. Scary stuff. It's definitely an interesting topic to look into. Literally just search up trauma or dealing with trauma or whatever. Mental trauma is pretty gnarly. But, yeah, this dude's, definitely interesting. And his whole fucking sex dungeon shit on the video is pretty fucking surreal. A fucking tortured dungeon in his backyard. But, yeah, also, the city he lived in was a questionable city with a high crime rate, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly. So, Ray was tried in 3 separate trials for his attacks, one for his acts against Cynthia Vigil, one for those against Angelica Montano, and one for those against Kelly Garrett. Trial 1 resulted in a mistrial and retrial with the conviction in the trial for all 12 counts. Okay. Montato died before trial 2. Oof. And there was no conviction. Oof, damn. The devil's luck, I guess you could say, if you believe in that. Ray agreed to plead to a plea bargain in which he was sentenced in 2001 to 224 years in prison for the numerous offenses in the abduction and sexual torture of three young women in his home. I think they should have gave him three lives with that number of years. And probably the death penalty, but he'll be fucking tortured in prison because the inmates, they don't play that shit. Ray's daughter, Galinda Jean Jessie Ray, we'll just call her Jessie, also was tried on charges of kidnapping. She was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. That's bullshit. Because kidnapping, you can get like a lot of time, like 50 fucking years. Because kidnapping, if you don't know, in some states can constitute the unwilling moving of a person. So, like, if you grabbed them by the arm and dragged them, like, 2 feet or to another room, that could technically be kidnapping or abduction. But, you'd have to correct me down in the comments. But, yeah. And then she had to, serve an additional 5 years on probation. Yeah, that's bullshit right there. In 1999, accomplice Dennis Roy Yancey was convicted of the strangulation murder of Marcy Packer in Elephant Butte, which Ray recorded. Ooh. Can't beat that if there's recorded evidence. In 2010... Yancey was paroled after serving 11 years in prison. Holy fuck. But the release was delayed by difficulties in negotiating a plan for residence. So he couldn't find a place to live. 3 months after his release in 2011, Yancey was charged with violating his parole. He was remanded to custody where he is to remain until 2021, so this year, to serve the rest of his original sentence. Yeah, that's bullshit. What was his original sentence, bro? Fuck's sake. Sad, man. It's fucking sad. In 2000, Cindy Hendy was accomplice to testify against Ray, received a sentence of 36 years for her role in the crimes. She was scheduled to receive parole in 2017. She was released in July 15th, 2019, after serving the 2 years of her parole in prison. Okay. On May 28th, 2002, Ray was taken to Lee County Correctional Facility in Hobbs, New Mexico, to be questioned by state police. He died of a heart attack. Yep. But, yeah. I think, in my personal opinion, the whole, imprisonment and the rapes and the tortures are all worse than the murders. Because, yeah. I mean, I'd rather be murdered than held captive and tortured for days. But, that's just me. But, yeah, it takes someone else to... a different kind of person, if you can call them that, to, do these kind of things. But, yeah, I'll go watch the documentary or whatever, and I'll see if there's anything else they mentioned that this article missed. I'll be, right back. Holy, that thing was fucking deep and disturbing. But, here's what I, what they covered that the website didn't. Sorry if I repeat anything, and sorry I didn't do this earlier, but you know, if you want to go watch it, the link will be in the description below, so we can do this together if you want. But it's thought about 30 women went through David's sex dungeon, and many of them were thought to be killed as well, and he admitted in interviews in being involved in sexual assaults as early as the age of 15, so it is speculated that he had been at it for 44 years and was only caught for the 3-ish victims or whatever, which is pretty wild. So there's strong evidence to suggest he's most likely a serial killer. On the tape, like on his sex introduction sex tape thing, his intro not intro his introduction tape, he admitted to 37 plus women being victims of his. And yeah, the introduction tape, like I said earlier, I'm pretty sure, is going to be in the description below, so go give that a listen if you want. But the town he lived in, the Truth or Consequences town, was like a Wild West kind of town, and it was a don't ask, don't tell kind of deal. So a lot of things went under the radar or whatever. But Ray did work for a local state park, so vast access to a lot of hiding places, and he was well versed with the geography or whatever of the park. But Cynthia Verhill was also a heroin addict, the one who escaped naked and went to the neighbor's door with the collar around her neck. But yeah, she was a heroin addict and a prostitute. Everything Cynthia described was in the house, in Ray's house, where he kept her. From the human waste bucket she used as a toilet to the bed and the rest of the chain she broke off that was around her neck that was tied to the bed or the wall somewhere, and the broken lamp that was broken in the struggle with either Ray's girlfriend or daughter, I forget which one. I said it in here somewhere earlier. Everything they found helped corroborated Cynthia's story. And Ray said Cynthia agreed to a session of rough bondage in police interrogations or whatever. So, as I said earlier, their whole defense was that it was all consensual. But a lot of the items were homemade in his torture trailer, so he made a lot of the items he used on these poor women himself. The tools were named with their uses, and for example, one of them was called the ankle spreaders that would forcefully spread their ankles and stuff. Personal artifacts and evidence from multiple unknown women were found in his property, so like in the sex dungeon thing and his house. Videotapes array testing his equipment, and one of the tapes cut to him with a captive, so he recorded his crimes or whatever. And I'm pretty sure they said it was tape 100 that this was. The police took the image of the tattoo from Cynthia's leg, I believe. From Kelly Van Cleve's leg, and they gave it to the FBI to enhance it, and then they released it to the public, and Kelly Van Cleve came forward and was like, yeah, that's my tattoo. But she had no clue how they had her tattoo or what they wanted from her due to the drugging or whatever. And in his house, they found the drugs he used to drug her or whatever. But yeah. Also, the introduction tape was a very big part of his conviction, and basically an unknown confession on his part, it sounds like to me. But it's fucking wild, cause the confession was not played on the first trial, but we'll get into that a little later. But no evidence was found in the lake by his house, and they searched the lake 3 times, and they searched the desert a bunch of times, and nothing came of it. And Kelly Van Cleve was their only credible witness, because the other chick was a heroin addict and prostitute, so, you know. The daughter would also bring home victims to her father. One of them was the friend, like I mentioned, and the other was not. But the Kelly Van Cleve girl or whatever said that she remembered going home with the daughter or whatever, I'm pretty sure, and waking up on the couch with a knife to her neck and being placed in a dog collar and then being brought to the sex dungeon chamber thing. Sorry for my stuttering there, guys. They knew he had something to do with the Maria Parks disappearance, but they didn't have enough evidence to properly link or charge him with it. But Maria was at the bar with a friend of Ray's, Roy Yanzi, a possible accomplice. And Roy said it was to my understanding that Ray has had many years of experience in raping, torturing, and killing women, and this was in a police interrogation. So Ray basically confirmed that Maria was a victim of Ray's. Roy was a victim. Yeah, fuck me. Sorry with these pronunciations, guys. And so yeah, Roy confirmed that Maria was a victim of Ray's. There we go. I can't talk, man. Holy. But thank you for sticking with me, guys. The beauties of podcasts. They can be a little unorganized, you know? Roy and Ray hid Maria's body in the desert, and they rolled it down into a ravine and covered it and hid it more. And then, Roy tried to guide them to the body, but they were unsuccessful. They searched multiple locations, multiple times with helicopters, dogs, and all that stuff. And, Roy suggested that, Ray went back and moved the body to a different location, and the police were like, yeah, that makes sense, because, if you think your partner could be shaky, you might as well go back and relocate the body so they can't bring the police to the body or whatever. But without the body, Ray couldn't be charged. I think I may have said that, but I'm not sure. But, Kelly Van Cleave ended up taking the stand against Ray. Kelly couldn't remember if Ray had played the introduction tape for her or not, so it was ruled irrelevant and wasn't shown to the jury. And this was on the first trial, because they had two for his case, for her kidnapping and torture or whatnot. The jury needed to reach a unanimous decision, which means everyone has to agree, and the decision in some jurors, the decision was hanged jury, and this means not all jurors believed Kelly, so they couldn't be unanimous. So they retried 9 months later with a different jury and judge, and this judge was like, yeah, we're playing the introduction tape, and they all came back with the unanimous decision of guilty. And then he was sentenced to the 224 years in prison. So, that's what I got from the documentary. Sorry if it's a little bit everywhere. I did not copy these notes straight from the thing. I typed them out on my, Google Docs. So, go watch the documentary for, the full thing. And, to see it even more clearly, if you want. But, yeah, this is a disturbing case. What do you think? You think he's a serial killer? And if they went back and said not guilty again, bro, I'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? Holy. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this whole case and this whole situation? How do you think the police handled it or whatnot? And what do you think his sentence should have been? But yeah, let me know down in the comments or whatever. But yeah, I say but yeah a lot. I should put that on a t-shirt for merch ideas. So that is David Parker Ray, aka the Toolbox Killer. Thank you for listening to this episode on the Murder House Radio Show. I hope you have a good rest of your Friday or whenever you are listening to this. Check out the social medias and the sources in the description below. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. And once you hit the subscribe button, hit the bell notification and select all to get all notifications if you are listening on YouTube. If you are listening on a podcasting platform, hit follow. See you next episode. This is your host X, signing off.